Welcome to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. I'm Ben Trueblood. John Paul Basham is here.
Yo.
We are without Mary Margaret today, but she will be back very soon. We've had a few episodes with Mary Margaret in here, kind of getting used to it. So we'll be glad to have her back.
Yeah. Now it feels like we're a woman down.
Woman down. But she'll be back with us. We're looking forward to that. Thank you for checking out another episode of the podcast. If you haven't taken a second to head to iTunes and leave a rating and review, we would love for you to do that. It helps other student ministry leaders find the podcast, and hopefully they can be helped, assisted, encouraged, challenged by the student ministry podcast that you have come to know and love. So we're thankful to be with you for another episode. Hit us up on Twitter at Ben Trueblood, at John Paul Basham, and we would love to carry on the conversation about student ministry outside of the podcast. So hit us up there and let us know topics you want us to cover, questions that you have, anything that you'd like to say. We also wanted to remind you of the contest that we have going on right now. It is our Christmas contest. The winner will receive $100 off to an annual subscription to the Student Pastor Network. So this is a great prize that you want to try to go after. And it is our Singing Christmas Tree contest. We're using the hashtag SingingTreeMoneyNote. And the goal is for you to take a video of your church's Christmas pageant or whatever you do, if you have one of those like big living or singing Christmas trees. And there's always that person that's hitting that big note in the solo that's right under the star at the top of the tree. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, then go to Google, search singing Christmas tree, living Christmas tree. You'll find these all over the place. If your church doesn't have one of these, we still want you to participate. And so all you got to do is climb up into the top of a tree and have somebody video you
hitting that money note.
Hitting that money note. And post it Instagram or Twitter under the hashtag singing tree money note. We're going to choose the best one, and we're going to give you $100 off to the Student Pastor Network annual subscription. So hashtag singing tree money note, jump in the contest. It's going to be fun. We want to see some of those singing Christmas trees. It's the people that are singing, not the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But
the Bible says the trees will do that.
Yeah. And the rocks.
Mm-hmm. But all creation.
Yes. So we want to see it, and we want to have fun with you all on that. So with that stuff out of the way, we are on to our episode for today, where we are going to talk about things that you should never say as a student pastor. All right? So things you should never say. This could be a really long list. But we're going to go back and forth on some highlights of things you shouldn't say. We're approaching a new year. Maybe it's time to evaluate things that have gone on. You guys that have been listening to the student ministry podcast in the past know that we are big fans of evaluation and goal setting and taking the time to do that. Maybe this has been one of those years where you said some things you shouldn't have.
If we weren't already in a hashtag competition.
Oh
man, hashtag shouldn't have said it.
Yes, that would be amazing. We knew, Nathan, we need to remember that and come back to it at some point perhaps. Because listen, just as people, we say things that we shouldn't say all the time.
Foot in mouth.
It just happens. And as a student pastor, I think that there's a higher chance that that happens just because of the number of conversations that there are, the number of students, families, just the weirdness that you encounter as a student ministry leader. I mean, there are so many opportunities to get ourselves in trouble with the phrases.
Well, and as communicators, we're used to talking a whole lot. And yeah. Sometimes the lesson is just stop. Stop talking.
Right.
Close mouth.
Okay, so the first one, and here's one, like from a mission standpoint, student ministry leaders should never say this. Just from what we believe about the importance of your role as a student pastor, you should never use the phrase, I'm just the student pastor. So sometimes this might happen, like if somebody's bringing to you a complaint or something about an issue that's in a part of the church that the truth is you don't have any control over and you don't really have any influence in that part of the church, but because you have a relationship with their family or whatever, they're coming to you and they're saying these things. Never say, I'm just the student pastor. Because the reality is that you would be frustrated if someone referred to you as just the student pastor, right? So when you're on a church staff, you should own the whole of what you're doing. You are in partnership with the other staff members. You're in partnership with the leadership body. And anything that's happening in the other areas of the church, you're a part of that, even as the student pastor. And even if you think that's the stupidest thing ever and you wouldn't do that program or that event or that, you know, fill in the blank, you wouldn't run it that way yourself. When you're on a team, when one team suffers, the whole team suffers. And so this is a phrase to avoid. One, because you're not just a student pastor. You play a really, really important role in families' lives and in the life of the church. And the other reason is because you're a part of a team, and being a part of that team on a church staff is really, really important.
Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing necessarily wrong with the words, I'm just a student pastor. But so much of it is the attitude or what's implied behind that statement. You know, so you might say, well, you know, sometimes somebody would say, "What, you know, why was this done?" And your answer may have been, I don't know, I'm just the student pastor," which may not feel like, man, that's not backstabbing. It's not, you know, necessarily malicious. But the attitude that comes behind that or what could be perceived is, man, I'm just kind of handing off the responsibility for this decision that you don't like.
Yeah.
To somebody else and not supporting leadership at all by saying, I don't know, you know, I'm just a student pastor. They don't ask me.
Right.
And it may be the reality that they didn't ask you. And there may be a good reason for not asking you.
Maybe but, so.
But as a part of that team, that does not show support and loyalty to the team.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I think not just student pastors, but all church staff members, student pastors included in that, could do a better job of being aware of team. Like, we've served on church staffs together, and we've served in churches not together. And I would say that for the most part, everybody just kind of does their own thing. And you obviously know the other staff members. If you're in a, you know, medium size church where they're, you know, where once you get past a couple, you know the people, but you're not really involved in what they do. And you can't answer more than surface level questions about their ministry. And I think that's something that I would probably go back and do differently, is to learn more about the other ministry areas of the church so that there would be more connections to students serving in those areas, perhaps. So that, because you know, the families that you serve are connected to several different ministry areas, and you're going to have those conversations. And so I think that's something I would do differently, is to go back and learn more at a deeper level about the other areas of ministry.
And I think what comes with that, or maybe what drives that, I know I had a very immature perspective for a long time in student ministry, like, oh, that's not my area. I don't really care what they're doing.
Yeah.
Which is not healthy.
Right.
Going back to the team thing, we should all be invested in one another's ministries and their areas and legitimately care about that and be in prayer for one another and the things that they're doing. So just all around, that's a healthy place to be.
Yeah. And if you're in the place where you're serving in student ministry, if you're at your church and you're thinking, you know what, maybe in 2018, I need to do a better job of being more of a team person. And maybe you need to lead the way in this and not talk about it, not say to your, you know, to your education team of people, hey, we need to do a better job. But maybe you just start acting that way and lead the way as the student pastor. And if you're looking for a place to start with the kids ministry area and build a relationship with those leaders, because that's your farm system. As as quality as the children's ministry is, that helps you because that feeds children into your student ministry, the piece of the pie that you're in charge of, that feeds them with really quality, foundation-built kind of kids. And obviously, that's something you want.
Well, and that kind of leans into the second thing that we have here, things to never say as a student minister, and that's not my responsibility. Just kind of passing that off as, man, that's somebody else's job. I'm not going to get outside of my element to do that. That job is below me or whatever it is. I'm already doing enough. I'm already wearing 12 hats. Why would I pick up number 13?
Yeah.
That's not my responsibility. Maybe a true statement as far as what your job description says. It may not be true as far as what the scripture says in loving one another, caring for one another, you know, serving together, meeting each other's needs, helping to shepherd the people that God has given us responsibility to shepherd.
Yeah. You're in it together. These two go really well, go hand in hand really well. I think when we compare the church to organizations, obviously there's a lot that we can learn. At the same time, there's a place where that breaks down. One of the things that I think, as far as that's not my responsibility, one of the places I think we can learn from is from a customer service standpoint. So yes, here's a breakdown. We wouldn't call people that attend your church customers, even though some may act like it. We wouldn't say that they're customers, right? They're church members. They're people who are trying to follow Jesus. They're disciples. We would describe them in a lot of ways. But what we can learn is, so like I worked at Sam's Club when I was in college for a few years. It was a super fun job. I loved it. And one of the things that they said was when a customer asks you a question, you don't just say, I don't know, or that's not my area, or that's not my responsibility. If you don't know, you walk them to that area of the store and find another team member and pass that conversation off. Or if you do know the answer, you still walk with them to the place that where the product is that they're looking for. So one of the things that we can learn there, and again, it leaps straight off of knowing more about the church that you serve in the different areas, that's not my responsibility isn't good enough. It's let me find out for you. And if you can't find out in that moment, because again, it's a different situation, you may not be able to say, I'm about to preach in 5 minutes, but let me go find the children's pastor. And so you may not be able to do that from a logistics standpoint. But taking a note, writing that down, asking them to email and telling them you'll find an answer is a much better response than just, man, that's not my area.
Yeah, and so there's two elements of that. One would be to the church member. The other one would be to other staff members. Senior leadership asks you, hey, will you do this for me? Or a coworker. Well, you're listening to this podcast, so you're the student ministry leader. The children's person comes to you or the worship person comes to you and says, hey, can you help with this? You know, that's probably not going to be a winning response. No, that's not my responsibility.
Yeah.
Now, it may be true that you don't have capacity to help with something else, but there's 1,000 better ways to respond than that's not my responsibility. Like, man, I am totally covered up, but let me help you find maybe some volunteers, some parents that are involved in my student ministry that could come give you a hand with something like that. Or let me send you some students that could do something like this. Finding that way to support them is important and not just saying, no, not my role.
Yeah, and I would say too, don't use your capacity as an excuse to just not do something you don't want to do.
Yeah.
Make sure that if you use that, it's actually true that you really can't do something else. Because many times those requests are going to be easy, simple things that you can help them knock out. And it actually will help your ministry as well. So the next one, things to never say as a student pastor, kind of goes along with falling under submission to the leadership that's above you. Kind of goes along with the authority topic that we've mentioned before on the podcast. If God has called you to the church that you're at, that he's also called you to be under the authority of of your supervisor, whether it's a minister of education or next gen pastor, and ultimately your senior pastor. And so there are going to be times probably where you might disagree with something that with a decision that's been made, and a church member might ask you questions about it. There might be a directional issue that you're taking the student ministry that somebody doesn't agree with, and they come to ask you about it. The response there should never be, well, my leadership wants me to do this, so that's what I'm doing. Or I really disagree with my pastor on this issue. Or, man, I really wanted to do it the way that you're saying, but my pastor won't let me. All of those kind of phrases, and you can say it a bunch of different ways, but the reality is using a phrase that states your disagreement with something that your leadership in the church, whether that be a pastor or a elder board or a committee, that the whatever structure your church is, that brings divisiveness, super unhealthy. It's something that we should never say. If you feel that way, that's a conversation that you should have behind closed doors with the people that you have disagreement with, or with God alone through prayer. Those are kind of the places where you can say those things.
And there's some real honest conversation that I think a lot of people probably aren't willing to approach. But when you have a disagreement like that, one thing I appreciated about the pastor that Ben and I served with in Virginia is he would often say, we can disagree behind closed doors, but when we walk out of here, I expect us to be in support of one another, and I expect you to support me. And sometimes what that comes down to, sometimes you may still disagree, but a good question to ask is, okay, I'm still not really there. So how do you think I can speak to this if somebody asks me about it? And there's some great conversation that you can have there. And often your leader will be able to help you communicate what needs to be communicated there that's still in support of the church leadership in general, but doesn't put you in a place where you're just lying about your support of an issue or a decision that's made there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great point, because often the people who are leading you have in their mind already a way that they want that to be addressed. So just ask for clarity there and address it the way that they want it to be addressed.
And then there's always the responsibility that you have to really take an honest assessment of why you disagree. Because your disagreement may be a purely personal preference. And if it's that, then it's probably not worth all of the time and attention that you're focusing on it.
Yeah, that's right. Know?
Or it may have a lot to do with that you just don't have all the details, which is often the case. You don't know the full picture. And for whatever reason, it would not be the right thing to do to share the full picture with you as the student ministry leader. And so there are often those times that you just need to say, I trust you in this. And I'll support you in it as my leader.
Yeah.
And we've talked about before, if you get to the place where you just can't trust, then there are other steps that you need to take. But as long as you're there, you need to find yourself in that place where you're trusting and supportive and loyal to your leadership, would be my opinion.
Yeah, man, this is one that I think is very important because of the authority piece of it. And God places us under authority all the time. He is our authority. And so how we respond to that authority says a lot about our walk with Jesus. And I know that there are people in churches who purposefully go to staff members and ask questions in such a way to try to dig and find the cracks and bring about divisiveness. And if they sense that you as a leader may not agree or may be thinking differently, there are people who just thrive on disagreement and stirring things up. You know there are pot stirrers probably in your church. And so this is, you have to be really careful here, because you could find yourself trusting someone and sharing, confidential conversations or whatever with that person and realize that you should not have trusted them, and that all of those things that you shared that you thought were in confidence come out in the open. And it's just a place to be really, really careful, especially when there's disagreement involved.
All right, so how about this one? I'm no theologian. How many times have you heard somebody say, just kind of in passing? Well, I think I've heard it in passing. I've also heard it from the pulpit. Yeah. I'm no theologian, but da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say that that's a dangerous statement?
Yes. This is something I hear from student pastors frequently. And it's always, either it's done in like a self-deprecating way as a way to kind of like identify with the audience. And that's like the mindset in it. Like, hey, I'm just like you in this. And then you explain something in a way that, you know, you try to help, quote, the normal person understand. So I've heard it done in that way, which I don't think is a good way to do it.
Right.
But that's one way I've heard it. And then I've heard it done another way to kind of excuse away an attitude that really beneath everything is, I don't want to learn more in that area. I'm not eager to study. That's not interesting to me. So I'm not, man, students don't want to hear about theology. I'm a student pastor. I'm not a theologian. So those are kind of the two ways that I hear it. And I think both are really dangerous.
Yeah, this is one of those times where if you are going to make the statement, I'm no theologian, then I think it would be in my opinion that you probably should not hold the role that you hold as the student ministry leader. Because what does a theologian do?
So a theologian would study God.
Right. So as a student ministry leader, as a student pastor, as a small group volunteer,
yeah,
you are somebody that is leading students in studying who God is and who they are in light of Him. So to say, I'm no theologian, is to say, I have no interest in studying God on my own, studying Scripture on my own, or helping you do that. That's what that says.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a cop-out. I think it's a dumbing down of the role of student pastor for someone to take that posture, because they're saying that what they're doing is not worth the effort that it takes to put into that. And so I think it's a diminishing of the role.
Yeah. Now I will say, I understand the heart behind that statement sometimes. Because people will say, I'm no theologian. I've also, you can kind of tell when somebody says, well, I'm no theologian, but they're kind of covering up for, just in case you have read the latest commentary on this.
That's right.
And are going to have an answer that's very different from what they give in just a minute, then they've kind of covered their bases. And I understand being in a place where maybe you're not 100% confident. You know, you haven't done the study necessary to really feel comfortable in that conversation with that piece of doctrine, fleshing out this piece of scripture. My counsel there would be, don't come to a teaching environment unprepared, and then you never have to give that precursor to what you say.
Yeah.
Like if you walk into an environment and have to say, well, I don't really know what I'm talking about, but here's what I'm going to shoot from the hip with.
Yeah. I feel that way here in my role at Lifeway theologically a lot. So as a student pastor, I kind of felt like, you know, I read, I tried to study, I felt like I could carry on a pretty decent theological conversation. The things that we taught kind of went along with that. And then I came here where there's a building full of really well-read theologian people, and they started using words that I have never heard before. And real soon, like, it was, you know, I can identify with the using the phrase, I'm no theologian, to kind of give yourself an out, because that's, man, I knew I was in over my head with people that work here. Like, I just can't carry on a theological conversation with Trevin Wax.
Yeah.
Like after about 5 minutes, he's to a place that I'm not. So like I know that. And so I don't do that. Now I'll ask him questions and I'll learn, but I'm not going to teach that.
Yeah. It's kind of one of those spots my dad used to say, it's better to close your mouth and let people think you a fool than to open your mouth and let them prove you right.
That's right. That's so good. And I think that's a good word of wisdom for a lot of people, for a lot of people too, especially in this conversation about things that you should never say. Think before you speak, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you may not be what we would call a modern day theologian where that's your job. You are a theologian in the truest sense of the word, meaning that you spend your full-time job as a professor teaching it or doing research and studying it or an author and writing about it. But that's not a crutch for you to lean on to either give yourself an out or an excuse away for something that you haven't studied or to use it to diminish the role. And if you begin to hear that a lot from your volunteer leaders, then maybe that's a clue for you to say, oh, maybe I need to do some more training in this area so that my leaders feel more prepared to teach and have these kind of conversations. And just as a side note, your teenagers do want to talk about this stuff. They may not phrase it that way, but you're believing students want to be exposed to theology and doctrine because it's God and the Holy Spirit resides in them, and that will draw them to the person you're studying about, who is God the Father.
The number one most attended and most consistently attended Bible study that I've ever done in student ministry was using Wayne Grudem's Bible doctrine book, walking through the student version of systematic theology. It was the number one.
Yeah. So let's wrap up with this one. This is how I did it at my last church, is the phrase you should never say as a student pastor. This is how I did it at my last church.
Well, you know, we always did it at my last church. That way, I don't know.
Exactly. That's how it comes across. No, I think here, man, so you may have had an awesome experience at your last church, and there are a lot of things that you're going to treasure and remember about that experience, but none of the people at your new church were there. And it's a different context, and it's a different group of people, and it's a different group of parents. And there are some similar struggles, but there are also very different ones. And you serve with a different pastor. There are so many differences. So take, internalize, learn from what your last church experience was, and then have a new dream. Have a new vision, building on what you've learned and the great things that happened, and start something new. Do something new. Because your people, the students, the parents, your pastor, everybody will get fatigued constantly hearing about how great things were at your previous place.
Yeah, and that's not to say that nothing is transferable. So yeah. Much is transferable from church to church with a little bit of tweaking and contextualizing. But I think the pitfall is that we tend to be creatures of habit, and so we can fall into routine and always lean into the things that are most familiar. So we walk into a new student ministry environment and want to do the things that we know we've done before. We've already figured it out. There's not near as much legwork to create something new. But what you've done before is not always just automatically better than what's being done now.
Yeah.
And that's just an ego thing a lot of times. That we just need to take a moment to say, okay, let's look at what's been done. Let's do a study of these people, of this culture, of this environment and see what they love and what resonates with them. And then maybe some of the things we've done before can be adapted to fit so that you don't, I mean, you don't always have to reinvent the wheel. To some degree, it's smart to take what you've done before and retool it to make it work in another environment. But just being stuck in that, man, this is what we used to do and this was the home run and nothing else is going to rank up there with what I've done before, is just an arrogant and inefficient mindset to come to the ministry table with.
Yeah. Well, and you run the risk of people, when you say that, you run the risk of people hearing you say, man, everything here is garbage.
Right.
Like nothing is done right here and nothing is done well here. And man, people are proud of their church and they're proud of where they've come from. And so you lose credibility up front when you talk like that, because they hear, man, this person doesn't think anything we've done is good.
Yeah. Well, and they want to hear you say, when you can, that you're affirming of what's going on there, that God is moving there.
Yeah.
You know, you may have stepped into a place where they're really wanting change and they're really needing some adjustments to be made. But that doesn't mean that they want you to come to every single leader meeting and talk about how much better it was where you came from.
Yeah. And even if it was, and even if everything that you did there is going to work in your new place, you don't have to say, this is what we did there.
Right.
Just do it.
Yeah.
You don't have to reference the before place.
Mm-hmm.
Just get out there and do stuff. So is there any last, before we wrap, any other last statements, John Paul, that you would like to make, things to never say as a student pastor?
Well, I think maybe the last one that I would put out there is never to make fun of your spouse.
That's a good one.
In front of your leaders or students, or anyone.
Right.
If you are married, then one of the best things that you can live out in front of your people is your dedication to your spouse.
Yeah.
And that relationship that should be your number one relationship, right behind that between you and the Lord. So to stand up and just trash talk your spouse for the sake of a funny moment in a message, or out of frustration in a meeting, is something that you should never do.
Yeah. Your spouse is not your living illustration that you can just pull into your messages whenever. That's a really good one. I'm glad you brought that one up.
Man, speaking of illustrations, do you always ask permission if you're going to tell a story about something that happened in your family? Do you ask permission from your family to tell?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I rarely do it. Very, very rarely will I use an illustration that features another person in my family as the centerpiece of that.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem when people do, unless it draws a negative light on that person. But yeah, I'm a permission asker for sure.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you too.
I think that's the safest bet.
Yeah.
You never want your wife to show up and be ready to listen to the message and then you air all the dirty laundry.
Yeah.
Like,
and
man,
it's a total surprise.
Yeah. I think our people really resonated with that story, don't you?
Yeah. And your wife's like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
So here's another one that I would throw out. And this doesn't go on the as serious list as we've had so far. But I want to go ahead and throw it out there. And maybe we could try to end this trend in student ministry of saying, like, when you introduce yourself and your spouse, like, my hot wife or whatever,
oh,
like, it drives me insane. And I, 85%, this is one of those times where you just make up a statistic, but you think it's directionally accurate because you've been around a lot of student pastor groups. Man, like, I think 80 plus, 85 plus percent of student pastors, when they're in a moment and they're introducing themselves and their wife, they introduce them and connect it to some type of physical affirmation at the same time. And it's so weird. I don't understand it.
Yeah. So what language would you substitute that with? Would you say, "And this is my beautiful wife, Kristen"? Or would you just totally, you would just say, "This is my wife, Kristen"?
I am for totally removing any type of compliment in that moment. "This is my wife, Kristen," is what I would go with.
Yeah. I personally don't have an issue with somebody saying, "This is my beautiful wife," or "my beautiful bride." This is kind of, that's, you know, kind of Christian speak, my bride, right? But there's something about somebody saying, and "this is my smoking hot wife." There was an itinerant speaker that went around for a little while that always talked about his smoking hot wife. And it was always so awkward.
Yeah, it's awkward. And part of the thing is, I think that student path, like in that moment, they're trying to get a laugh because of the way it sounds. And so then you're like trying to get a laugh at the same time as you're trying to give a compliment. And I don't think that any wife wants to stand there in a room full of people and be referred to that way. It's just, let's end the trend.
Well, and I mean, you have to consider, when you use the word smoking hot, how do teenage boys use the term smoking hot? And I don't know that they say smoking hot anymore. But right. When they use language like that, they're talking about a girl that they're just basically lusting over in the moment.
Right.
So for you to stand up and say that is leading all the other men in the room to view your wife through that lens.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
No, it's the whole thing is lame.
End the trend. Hashtag end the trend.
End the trend. All right, we're going to close it right there. Those of you that stayed to the end of the list, man, you got a real treat there with the last couple. John Paul, I'm glad you brought that one up. That was a how you treat your wife in that moment and things you should not say is a huge one. And two, for ladies that listen to the podcast and you lead student ministry in your churches, we would say the same thing going the other direction is, you know, the husband isn't the punchline. Yeah, same thing we would say for the wife. But thanks for listening to the Lifeway Student Ministry podcast. We will catch you next time. Remember, hashtag singing tree money note. Climb up in a tree and get that Christmas song money note, or film the one that's at your church.
Please climb up in a tree.
We'll see you next time.